Despite the prosperity of my church, it was learned that material organization has its value and peril, and that organization is requisite only in the earliest periods in Christian history. After this material form of cohesion and fellowship has accomplished its end, continued organization retards spiritual growth and should be laid off. Retrospection and introspection. Entirely separate from the belief and dream of material living, of material church organization, is the life divine, revealing spiritual understanding and the consciousness of man's dominion over the whole earth, science and health. Mary Baker Eddy, discoverer and founder of Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy wrote the church manual for one purpose only. She wanted Christian scientists to understand that in reality, they possess sovereign power to think and act rightly. She admonishes, "Christian scientists, be a law to yourselves," unquote. Untrammeled by an outside authority. See Pulpit and Press, page 3, Science and Health, page 442. The Christian scientist, like Jesus, can say, "All power is given unto me." And Jesus said unto them, "These are the words which I spoke unto you while I was yet with you, that all things must be fulfilled." Then opened he their understanding, that they might understand. Our book is titled Mary Baker Eddy, Leader Forever. The Manual Comes Alive, by Helen M. Wright. This is a Mary Baker Eddy Institute production. The author invites all spiritually minded readers to share the contents of her book with like-minded seekers of truth. This book is dedicated to the spiritually minded reader. In the book, Mary Baker Eddy's writings will be given full credit. Other quotes will be from Mary Baker Eddy's essays compiled by Richard Oakes and the We Knew Mary Baker Eddy series. Foreword. In 1889, when Mary Baker Eddy retired to Concord to work on the 50th edition of Science and Health, no one was found who could preach in her place. At this critical juncture, Mrs. Eddy recommended that the church be dissolved. She states, quote, "No sooner were my views made known than the proper measures were adopted to carry them out, the votes passing without a dissenting voice. This measure was immediately followed by a great revival of mutual love, prosperity, and spiritual power. The history of that hour holds this true record, adding to its ranks and influence this spiritually organized Church of Christ Scientist in Boston still goes on. A new light broke in upon it, and more beautiful became the garments of her who bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace." But after 3 years of spiritual formation alone, and even though they were experiencing unprecedented prosperity, the students began a campaign to reorganize, to again organize on the old, legally chartered basis. Mrs. Eddy explained to William B. Johnson, clerk of the Mother Church, quote, "If you organize again, it will ruin the prosperity of our church. Open the eyes of the church to these facts. If she again sells her prosperity for a mess of pottage, it is not my fault. Their urge to reorganize, she told them, was not of God, and only harm can come from returning to a position outgrown." Mrs. Eddy's whole purpose was to design a church that would aid man in his great quest, the understanding and service of God, infinite good. She saw that only suffering would teach them God's will. Today, with the Church of Christ Scientists' former great prosperity gone, we see how right she was in her condemnation of the reorganizing of the church in 1892. She might have said, "If all else fails, follow my directions." We cannot afford to continue to ignore our leaders' directions. The price is too high. The quiet catastrophe the hierarchy has presided over for the past 80 years has headed the Christian Science movement towards oblivion. This book is a challenge to every loyal Christian Scientist to pay close attention to the bylaw estoppels in Mary Baker Eddy's manual as she wrote it. We must seek to heal, to reach across the divide and cause the Christian Science movement to flourish again. Blessed are we, insomuch as the consciousness of good, grace, and peace comes through affliction rightly understood, as sanctified by the purification it brings to the flesh, to pride, self-ignorance, self-will, self-love, self-justification. Sweet indeed are the uses of his rod. Miscellaneous Writings. Chapter 1. Mary Baker Eddy, Leader Forever. Quote, "Once upon a time, there were four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have." Part 1. This might have been a tale of what happened after Mary Baker Eddy left the human scene, but it wasn't. At that time, when there was an important job to be done, because those Mrs. Eddy had trusted betrayed that trust, somebody did do something. Somebody answered Mrs. Eddy's plea, quote, "Tell the truth about your leader, because the truth in regard to your leader heals the sick and saves the sinner." Immediately after Mrs. Eddy's passing, Frederick Dixon, editor of the Christian Science Monitor, admonished board member Archibald McClellan that obedience to the manual required termination of the five-member board, since this board was only installed by Mrs. Eddy to transact the business of the Mother Church, and the Mother Church as a material organization ceased to exist when Mrs. Eddy was no longer here. The manual shows every function of the Mother Church required Mrs. Eddy's consent, approval, or her signature in her own handwriting. Mr. Dixon reports that board member McClellan stated emphatically that he had to obey Mrs. Eddy while she was here, but he felt no compulsion to obey her when she was not here. Having kicked off this sprint for obedience, Mr. Dixon returned to England after the great litigation, leaving the Boston hierarchy to stew and simmer in disobedience for the next 80 years. While we're on the subject of obedience, the following from Recollections of Mary Baker Eddy by James Gilman seems pertinent. Quote, "In speaking of obedience, Mrs. Eddy referred to Mr. Nixon, an important early worker not to be confused with Mr. Dixon, as embodying a general feeling of an unwillingness to obey her implicitly as a little child. The same unwillingness the board of directors exhibited in regard to obeying the manual. She represented him, Mr. Nixon, as being in the attitude of mind to feel it beneath him to obey her because she was a woman. He would declare himself ready to obey God in whatever he might require of him, but to obey a woman? Bah! Continuing, she said, "We understand God and are ready to obey him only so far as we understand and are ready to obey his highest representative in mortal life. Our love for God and consequent willingness to obey him is never greater than our love for and willingness to obey his highest demonstrator." Unquote. 2,000 years ago, his highest demonstrator was Christ Jesus. In modern times, his highest demonstrator is Mary Baker Eddy. Valiant warriors arise to defend Mary Baker Eddy. During the years that followed Frederick Dixon's parley with Director McClellan, as the manual-terminated board of directors increasingly arrogated to themselves the mantle of authority on Christian Science, a few valiant warriors, stalwarts, who, not counting the cost to themselves, have done and are continuing to do their best to awaken the field. They have courageously come forward to defend Mary Baker Eddy's manual bylaws, to fight for a sacred cause against the injustice standing in a holy place. These intrepid soldiers of the cross, fighting in the trenches, persevered in their efforts to free the Christian Science movement from the reign of ecclesiasticism that is harming it. Confronted with traitors to the right of them, an apathetic field to the left of them, encountering scorn, ridicule, and severe persecution, they persevered. They knew they had latched onto an issue that would not go away until he whose right it is shall reign. Today, as the fires of spiritual thinking are stoked, people are awakening and are appalled at what has happened to the Christian Science movement. Now, instead of continuing on with weary resignation, many are rising up in rebellion, demanding the umbilical cord to a dishonest Boston regime be cut. The organizational Mother Church outlived Mrs. Eddy by 6 months. It can't be emphasized too strongly that there was no material Mother Church after Mrs. Eddy left the human scene. At the annual meeting following her departure, no officer of the Mother Church could be elected without her consent. Manual, page 25. Her manual shows that when she was no longer here, the Mother Church assumed the status of a branch church, though a glorified one, entitled The First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston. Mrs. Eddy's manual freed this Boston church to manage only its own affairs, as set forth in the Deed of Trust, manual, page 128. It also freed every individual Christian Scientist, as set forth in the documentation, which will follow later. A prominent article entitled Christian Science in Poor Health appeared in the June 2, 1992 Los Angeles Times, stating, quote, by 1892, Eddy reorganized the church in its present form with a powerful, self-perpetuating board of directors whose members choose their successors, a structure that today leaves church critics with no direct power to change the church, unquote. This is incorrect. However, it is precisely what the board of directors wants the Christian Science field to believe when exactly the opposite is true. The five-member board was not self-perpetuating. It could not replace a lost member without Mrs. Eddy's consent, as can be readily seen by turning to the manual, page 26, section 5, and reading what Mrs. Eddy wrote. Mrs. Eddy left a final plea to all loyal Christian Scientists. I ask the help of others, that my students reprove, rebuke, and exhort. A lie left to itself is not so soon destroyed as it is with the help of truth-telling. Miscellany, page 130. Mrs. Eddy's Deeds of Trust. If Mrs. Eddy's manual had been obeyed, the organizational Mother Church, which dissolved 6 months after Mrs. Eddy's passing, would have taken on the status of a branch church and assumed its legal title, The First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston. It was distinguished from all other branch churches by the preposition the, namely, the First Church of Christ Scientist. It had no power over any church other than that one Boston church, as provided by Mrs. Eddy's deed of trust concerning it. Manual, pages 128, 135. That first deed, the deed of 1892, conveyed property on which to build the original Mother Church. The deed states, the congregation which shall worship in said church shall be styled the First Church of Christ Scientist. This is in harmony with Mrs. Eddy's definition of church. In 1902, Mrs. Eddy began deeding to the 4-member board the property she had purchased for the extension. It should be noted that on March 18, 1903, the first 2 of the 10 deeds needed to secure the property for the extension were conveyed from Mrs. Eddy to the 4 fiduciary directors. The March 17, 1902 deed did not count, as it did not contain the restrictionary further trusts provision. Note, the directors increased to 5 on February 7, 1902, and the March 17, 1902 deed had already been drafted and presented to Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy's step 1 and 2 to eliminate organization. Because the Boston hierarchy has led most Christian Scientists into believing that the board of directors was Mrs. Eddy's successor, it can't be stressed too forcibly that the Mother Church was entirely under Mrs. Eddy's jurisdiction. The board of directors was under her absolute control. Nothing could operate without being subject to her approval. See Manual, page 18, which states that the reorganized church was, quote, under her jurisdiction. Mrs. Eddy was given absolute control of Mother's Church, as the bylaws containing estoppels show. Estoppel is a legal term for stopping an action. It should be noted, of course, that while 29 functions could not continue without her, many other functions of the church went unimpeded by virtue of not having estoppel restraints with which to deal. Nothing could operate without her approval, consent, or her signature, as hereinafter explained. We should add here that ultimately every function was subject to her permission. She could, of course, allow something to go ahead which she saw was inappropriate, since she was ready for her followers to learn by what they suffer. Suffer, allow things to take place. And here it should be noted that the Mother Church was not under Mrs. Eddy's absolute control from 1892 until 1895, when the first manual appeared. For 3 years, the reorganized church worked out the issues of organization without the benefit of the manual. They operated under a modest form of cohesion, with just a few pages of guidelines, which were never even reduced into pamphlet or book form. Mrs. Eddy's absolute control, as we understand it today, must not be confused with the historical sketch assertion of the church being under her jurisdiction.